Romans chapter 8. So if you'll turn there in your Bibles with me, I've got a few more things that I'd like for us to observe on the subject of hope. One of the things, one of the conclusions that I came to, and it was something I already knew, but I concluded in preparing that lesson for this morning that, you know, there's a whole lot more about hope that needs to be said than can be said in one 35 or 40 minute sermon. And I don't pretend to be able to say everything that needs to be said on any given subject for that matter, but there were a few remaining things that I thought would be worthy of sharing with you this evening. Let's begin by reading again from Romans chapter 8, beginning at verse 22. For we know that the whole creation groans and suffers the pains of childbirth together until now. And not only this, but also we ourselves, having the first fruits of the Spirit, even we ourselves groan within ourselves, waiting eagerly for our adoption as sons, the redemption of our body. For in hope we have been saved, but hope that is seen is not hope. For who hopes for what he already sees? But if we hope for what we do not see, with perseverance or patience, we wait eagerly for it. I've decided to entitle this lesson tonight, Hope Puts Us in Gear. Now that may not make much sense to you now, but hopefully by the time we finish this study and you do a little bit more study on your own, you might see the point of what that's really saying. Hope puts us in gear. As we said this morning, hope is something that I'm afraid we've misunderstood, and especially from the standpoint of looking at hope from an earthly sense, we might say a modern sense today. And we noted the fact that hope today is a word that has no conviction behind it. Hope is just a word that expresses optimism. I hope things get better. I don't know that they're going to get better. I don't know that anything is going to change, but I hope things get better. I hope it rains. I hope it doesn't rain. Whatever the case may be, we have no control over those things. We don't even have an understanding of how to make those things happen or if they will happen, but we hope that they will take place. That's the hope of today. That's the hope of modern language. It's just purely something that we desire and yet have no inkling as to whether it will really happen or not. We noted the fact that in the Bible, particularly in the New Testament, where we find the word hope between 60 and 70 times, the word hope means something a little bit different. It does not mean optimism. It does not mean something that we express as just a desire with no idea of whether or not it'll take place. But the hope that's enjoined upon us in the New Testament is a conviction, is an assurance of something that is going to take place. It's really important for us to understand that. And as we read through the Scriptures, let's make sure we understand hope as the Bible means it, not as we understand it in our language today. Now, before we talk about some specific ways that hope puts us in gear, we got a little unfinished business back in Lamentations. We went to that passage this morning from Lamentations chapter 3. Lamentations is a book or a composition of five, some have called them funeral addresses or funeral dirges. Five different chapters in this little book written by Jeremiah. There are some who oppose the idea that Jeremiah wrote it, but I think they're in the minority. It seems clear. And chapters 1 through 4 for sure were written just shortly after Jerusalem was destroyed and God's people were carried into Babylonian captivity. Some people say that chapter 5 appears to have been written a little bit later as the realities of the captivity really soaked into Jeremiah's mind, and he began to feel the everyday pain and sorrow that was a result of the captivity. But chapters 1 through 4 are written in a very interesting way. Chapters 1, 2, and 4 each have 22 verses. Each of those verses in the Hebrew language, not in English, we've messed things up by translating it into English, but in the Hebrew language, each successive verse begins with a successive letter of the Hebrew alphabet. Chapter 1, verse 1 begins with the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet. Chapter 1, verse 2 begins with the second letter, and so on. And then when you get to chapter 3, which has 66 verses, verses 1, 2, and 3 begin with the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet. Verses 4, 5, and 6 begin with the second letter, and so on. Those forms of writing are referred to in Hebrew poetry as acrostics. And there's something else very interesting about Lamentations. Lamentations is written in a meter. You English teachers will understand what meter is when we're talking about poetry. It's written in what's referred to as limping meter. Let me show you how limping meter sounds. I am the man who has seen affliction because of the rod of his wrath. He has driven me and made me walk in darkness and not in light. Surely against me he has turned his hand repeatedly all the day. In the Hebrew language, the first line has three basic points of emphasis, and then the second line falls off in a very mournful fashion to two points of emphasis. But even as we read it in English, it's clear that it's written in a fashion. In fact, it was often used as a responsive reading. But the emphasis is on the mourning, the sadness, and the sorrow that comes out of these words of Jeremiah. We looked at Jeremiah chapter 3, or Lamentations 3, this morning, and we noted how that down in verse 18, Jeremiah, after recounting all of the things that are many of the things that he has seen wrong or the sufferings that he's endured, he says in verse 18, "So I say, my strength has perished, and so has my hope from the Lord." The word hope is found several times here in Lamentations chapter 3, and it's important for us to understand that there are three different ways that the word hope is used here in this chapter. In verse 18, it is a word which means literally reasonable expectation. It's translated into English, hope. Reasonable expectation. In other words, Jeremiah says, after telling of all of these things that have happened, he says, it's unreasonable for me to expect the Lord to do anything for me. Then as we get over into verse 21 and verse 24, verse 21, "This I recall to my mind, therefore I have hope." And verse 24, "The Lord is my portion, says my soul, therefore I have hope in Him." Those two occasions, using an entirely different Hebrew word, express the same thought as the New Testament kind of hope. The hope that is expressing tremendous confidence and assurance. And so when you read through chapter 3 and you come to verse 18 and he says, my hope in the Lord has died, he's not saying he doesn't believe the Lord loves him anymore. He's not saying that he's given up on God and God has given up on him. He's saying because of everything that has happened, it's not reasonable for me to expect the Lord to help me. But then in the next two occasions, verse 21 and verse 24, he expresses the Lord's care and the Lord's deliverance that will come. And then if you drop down to verse 29, we find the hope, the word hope again. Let him put his mouth in the dust, perhaps there is hope. Again, an entirely different word in the original language is translated into the same English word, hope. And here it's a word which expresses the thought of maybe this is what it takes to get to the end. Now that's a lot to be piled into one little word, and I've kind of lengthened it in order to make it easy to understand. But when he says, let him put his face or mouth in the dust, perhaps there is hope. In other words, go ahead and go through with it. Because this is the only way that the process will complete itself. What's he talking about? He's talking about Israel's attitude that they need to have toward the captivity and toward their wickedness of the past and the fact that this needs to change them. They've got to go through this punishment of captivity. He says, that's the only way there's any hope. That's the only way there's any possibility of coming out of this situation. And while this gets a little bit more technical than perhaps we want to, it's important for us to understand that many times there are differences in the original language that are referenced or rendered into the same English word in our language. But so far as I've been able to find, there isn't a single case in the New Testament where the word hope doesn't mean the confident assurance that God will deliver. Now, let's turn back over to Romans chapter 8 and let's notice some things about hope as we try to see how it is that hope puts us in gear. First of all, let me suggest to you that hope stresses two very valuable things, and the first of those things is futurity. Hope is a word that's all about something in the future. It's all about looking ahead. It's not about the here and the now. You see, that's what causes us to lose hope. We get so caught up in the here and the now. Remember we read from 2 Corinthians chapter 4 this morning where Paul says we need to be looking at the unseen, for the unseen is eternal. The seen is temporal. The futurity of hope. In other words, there is something ahead. There is something out there. We hear people say sometimes, I just don't have anything left in my life to look forward to. What they're saying is, I don't have any hope. Usually when we get to that point, and especially in reference to spiritual things, we don't like to hear it, we don't like to admit it, but it's basically by our own causing that we don't have anything to look forward to. For in our lives of service to God, in living the Christian life, there is the greatest and the grandest picture of futurity in our hope. John expressed a little bit of this futurity in 1 John chapter 3, verse 2. In verse 1, he says, behold, what manner of love the Father hath bestowed upon us that we should be called the children of God. Then in verse 2, he says, for it hath not yet, or we have, it hath not yet been revealed how we shall be. But we do know that when Christ is revealed, we shall be like Him. In other words, there is a great time when things are going to be different. Paul addresses this in 1 Corinthians chapter 15 as he talks about the resurrection and the mortal shall take on immortality. There is something yet in the future. Jesus was referring to this same thing in John chapter 14, verses 1 through 3, when he said, "Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you, and if I go prepare a place for you, I'll come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there you may be also." There's the future aspect that hope is all about. But then there's something else that hope stresses that is really troubling to a lot of people. For lack of a better term, I've called it invisibility. You know, some people have a hard time getting excited about something they can't see. Because, you see, we're all about seeing, feeling, and touching. And we've even been convinced sometimes that if we can't see it, if we can't touch it, it must not be real. Hope focuses our attention back to that which is invisible, that which is not seen, in the words of Paul in 2 Corinthians 4. We're reminded by this point and by those passages that we don't have to be able to see it in order to know it's real, because we serve a God, as that song we sang a few minutes ago says, who has an unchanging hand, who does not change, who does not lie, whose nature is truth itself. And so hope really gives some folks a struggle because it's about that which is invisible. But let's go a little bit further and let's look at some things that hope changes. Number one, it changes how we see us. In 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 11, Peter says, "I beseech you therefore as strangers and pilgrims, aliens and strangers, abstain from fleshly lust which war against your soul." How do you see yourself in relation to this world? We sing that song all the time, "This world is not my home, I'm just passing through." Do we really mean that? Most of us have settled in pretty deep, haven't we? We've got our roots really down there, and we consume a tremendous amount of our time with what I want and what I'm going to get and what I'm going to do with it and how I'm going to enjoy it and all of that. There's nothing wrong with having some things and enjoying those things as long as they don't keep us from serving God. But when we forget the fact that we're strangers and pilgrims here on this earth, we're shortchanging our own hope, because hope helps us to see ourselves as just passing through, not settling down on this earth forever. Not only does it change how we see us, but it changes what we value. In Colossians 3, verses 1 through 3, Paul writes, "If you then be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ sits at the right hand of God. Set your affection on things above, not on things of this earth, for you have died and your life is hid with Christ in God." That doesn't mean died physically, it means spiritually. If we're claiming to be Christians, we have died to the world through obedience to the gospel of Christ. Buried in the waters of baptism, risen to walk in newness of life. We've died, and our life is hid with Christ in God. So how do we value things, and what do we place the most value on? Remember what Jesus said about treasure? "Lay not up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust corrupt, where thieves break through and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, He said there's a close connection between where your treasures are and where your heart is. God's interested in our heart. We need to be laying up spiritual treasures. What do we value? Hope also changes what we do with life. The things of this life, and especially things that pertain to us. Our talents, our skills, and our abilities. What are we doing with those things? What about the opportunities that are coming before us on a daily basis? The opportunities to tell people about the gospel of Jesus Christ, the simple gospel. What are we doing with those opportunities? Are we using them? Remember the words of that old song, "Into our hands the gospel is given." Talks about those precious, fleeting moments that we need to be sharing the good news of salvation. There's one final thing I want to close with as we think about hope. Hope keeps us from settling. How many of you have seen that commercial that's been running lately on TV about the settlers? I think they went out and found the most citified fella in the world to depict an old settler with. But the commercial's all about, well, you know, we don't need DirecTV or Dish Network or whatever it is, because we've got cable. And the whole point of the commercial was, we've settled for cable. I guess the point is, cable's not near as good as those other things. I don't know. But I can't get the settlers, as he says the word, out of my mind. And even in some of the commercials, and there's several of them on the same theme, he talks about what we've settled for. In other words, this is good enough for me. One of the things I think they've settled for, you can correct me on this if I'm wrong, but I think maybe once a month everybody gets a lick off the family lollipop. Isn't that part of the commercial? Well, you know, it's kind of humorous. Until we begin to look at our own lives and ask the question, what am I settling for? You know, to the person who doesn't have hope, the biblical hope, and I'm convinced a lot of people don't, and it's evidenced in the way that they live and the things that they have settled for. Are we satisfied with just getting by, at least what we think is just getting by spiritually? I'm afraid most of those folks who think they want to just get by spiritually are going to be turned away in the end. What are you settling for? Do you really see the value in spiritual excellence? Or do you prefer to look at yourself as one who just kind of trails along behind, not drawing any attention, just wanting to do the bare minimum in order to whatever? Hope. Paul said, maketh not ashamed, doesn't disappoint. We're all groaning. We're all suffering. Brother Jimmy made reference in his prayer a few minutes ago, and as you've heard on the news by now, I'm sure, more police officers were murdered this afternoon in an apparent attempt just to make some kind of political statement or whatever. As we said this morning, we're living in a land that is really troubled. We've got more problems than some of us would have ever believed that we would have in this nation. we've got some problems. You know what our biggest problem is? Our biggest problem is not a racial problem. It's not a political problem. It's not a Democrat versus Republican problem. It's not a financial problem. Our biggest problem is that we are reaping the results of throwing away our morals and the moral standards of God's Word. And we may put some temporary band-aids on that problem by electing new leaders and holding some people more accountable. But until we get back to this, there is no permanent fix. There is a place, though, for every single one of us in the fix. That is to live our lives and to wield our influence to the very ultimate as God's children. And through our influence and through our outward teaching and our efforts to support the good work of the Lord's church, through those things we can make a difference. Small difference? Okay, I'll grant you that. But until we start moving back in the right direction, we're going to continue to suffer. Are we willing to settle for what we are right now?